This is a replay of the Wednesday night, March 8th WGN show. We started at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip for the world's best customer service. It's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe. It's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Got 3 big hours to spend together, and as usual, if it's on your mind, it will absolutely be on mine. But once again, I was stunned today. I tell you, stunned when I went several places and parts of the businesses were closed. And the reason they were closed is because they couldn't find employees. And the last one before I sauntered back to the studio to prepare to talk to you was actually a large grocery store, and the deli was closed at an unusually early hour. And it said, "Sorry for the inconvenience. We have no one to man the deli counter." And now, you know, we've talked a lot about this since the COVID pandemic began in 2020, and there was a lot of talk about how people were getting other payments and things of this nature, but that's all disappeared now, and apparently the need to work has not really returned. Now, I admit there are some things you will not do for money. Yeah, hopefully. Now, hopefully murder is among them, and other things as well, but apparently increasingly people are not willing to do jobs that they find untenable for whatever reason. In some cases they are. I was reading a story online about a gal who worked for group homes, and she started a new job, and she was supposed to go in at 7 in the morning, and midnight the night before she's to report to her first day of work. Management calls up in, you know, midnight. She's sound asleep because she's got to be there at 7, and they wake her up and they say, "Can you come in right now?" She says, "No." And my first day is tomorrow. I don't know what I'm doing. I need to be trained, et cetera, and so forth. That doesn't matter. Just come in. And they were stunned when she said no. And as she mentioned in the piece she wrote about this, her first day should have been her last day. She should have seen this as a sign. But the bosses would call at all hours of the day and night. "Come in now. We have no one else to work. You have to be here." And finally, she had to be unemployed, at least from that job. So I get those things. But in general, it seems that place after place after place is just deficient in employees. And my question is not why. I can think of a zillion reasons you don't want to work at a fast food establishment and a number of other places. But what I don't understand is how the people who formerly had these jobs are living. And no one has answered that to my satisfaction. And maybe that can be you. I don't know. All right. So now with that in mind, last night we talked about the disappearance of Chelsea Mark in Jacksonville. Well, now her car has been found, and found, by the way, at the other end of the state in Broward County in Fort Lauderdale. So Leah from Marcus Hook has an update, I do believe. So what do you know, Leah?
Yeah, it's Chelsea Mack. That's okay. And yeah, they said it was on a I-95 and a sample road, which I don't know what that is.
Yes.
Live in Florida. Do you know what that is?
Yes, I do. It's in Broward County. It's in Fort Lauderdale. I know exactly where Sample Road is.
Oh, okay. It's the name of a road?
It's the name of a road, yes. Absolutely.
Oh, because they had a small S on the flyer, so I didn't know. I thought it was something else.
No, it's West Sample Road, and it's absolutely, absolutely there. It's technically not, Sample would not be Fort Lauderdale, it would be part of Deerfield Beach, but like Sample and Powerline, that would be, part of Sample would go through Pompano Beach. So this is more northern Broward County, but obviously when you're looking at Florida, Miami is Dade County, and then the next county up is Broward, and that goes from like Hallandale to Boca Raton, and then you're into Palm Beach County. So it's pretty far south. And of course, I-95 is, you know, probably the most traveled route. Interesting, when I was a Floridian, I-95 was not completed because the state didn't want to lose the revenue from Sunshine State Parkway, now Florida's Turnpike. And so there were miles and miles of it that didn't exist because they forced you on the Turnpike. But now it's a through road, and you can go from Jacksonville to Miami on I-95 without ever stopping.
Okay, so we don't know what happened. I don't know if they pinged her cell phone yet. We don't know if she left it in the car or if they, but we don't know. We just don't know. They're not telling anything.
Yeah. Well, this is absolutely population. This is not the middle of nowhere. Sample Road, like I say, it could be Pompano Beach. It could be Coconut Creek. It depends. It's a long road. It depends where you are on it.
Yeah,
it's absolutely you know, populated. There's nothing about it where you're saying
I-95 is where it was.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So this is not the boonies. Where it meets I-95 would be Pompano Beach, actually, but. Yeah, this is heavy heavy population. Sample Road is 834, and it's you know, a major thoroughfare. And so
I've actually been to Pompano Beach a long time ago, but I've been there. So
you know, you get off and Sample Road also goes as far west that it hits Florida's Turnpike, and they have new exits for that now. But it's there.
Okay.
So it could
so
be.
We don't know if her car broke down and
probably
she
not
hitched a ride with somebody, or we don't. We just don't know. So now they're going to do a search. And they're taking volunteers for a search, and we got to have, I think, some guardian angels that are volunteering, so that's good. And, you know, Curtis Lee was guardian angels.
Right.
And that are volunteering, I know that. And then I don't know, I think they're going to try and get John Walsh's organization involved, but I'm not sure.
Now, at this point, you know, when they find a car, obviously the police are clearly interested in this. Is there any thought that maybe she was not abducted, that this was willing?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interestingly,
last month in at Sample Road and I-95, a guy was shot while driving on I-95 by Sample Road. And I remember, yeah, and because they closed all the southbound lanes for several hours, and the guy was just driving on I-95, and by the way, the middle of the night, it was like 3 in the morning, and apparently he'd been shot. And I don't, I heard that story. I don't know if they ever found out who or why or what, but apparently he was driving along on 95 and right by Sample Road, someone shot him.
Good news.
Yeah, so.
Well, I was thinking maybe her car broke down and but why wouldn't she have called on her phone? Why wouldn't she have called somebody instead of taking a ride from somebody? I don't know.
I'm also curious where on Sample Road the car was found, or was it found on the shoulder on I-95? Exactly where was the location?
Yeah, I think it was on the shoulder on I-95.
Okay. All right.
I believe.
All right. Yeah. Interesting.
So,
I don't know.
She was probably driving of her own volition, but then maybe broke down or something. I don't know. We just don't know. They're not giving it. The police are not being very forthcoming.
Well, especially if it's potentially a crime, they're not gonna
right.
They're not gonna give that up. Interesting. I don't know.
That's the only update I have. Again, you know.
Yeah. And why would she?
If anybody knows anything, call the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office or the Jacksonville Police Department.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the other end of the state, that's for sure. It's almost about as far as you can go, you know.
Or Broward County, now that it's in Broward County, maybe you can call there, too.
Yes.
Broward County Sheriff's Department.
Absolutely. Well, Florida Highway Patrol, too, because it's
I-95. Oh, they have Highway Patrol. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they
all
got
right.
it. So,
right. And as far as the working thing goes, you know, yes. Wawa down here is now offering $15 an hour plus a free hoagie for each shift.
And they're not finding people. So my question is, where are the people who used to be workers getting their money?
I don't know. It's unbelievable to me.
It is to me, too. I don't get it. There's part of this story that I just don't understand.
And, like, when I was working, I would have killed for a job that paid that.
Well, of course. No, yes, right. But back then, that was a lot more money than it is now. But even now, that's a respectable sum. And so the question
is,
where are you making that money otherwise? Now, there's a small percentage of people who are probably in the underworld trade, so to speak, things that are illicit. But that's not the majority of people. I don't believe the majority of the people have gone to the dark web and found, And so I'm not buying that. But I can't imagine what they're doing. And I don't get it.
I know there's a lot of people on, I know, working from home.
Of course.
I mean, I watch a show called House Hunters on,
HGTV.
On HGTV. Yeah, and they, practically every other person has at least one person in the couple is working from home.
Yeah, and that's fine. And those are legit jobs. Certainly, a lot of the call centers have pretty much disbanded and people can work from home. There's no reason why they can't. Their time online on the job can easily be tracked remotely, so the employer knows. Those are legitimate jobs.
The guy last night who was a doctor is working from home on one of those video doctor thing.
Well, telemedicine, right.
Telemedicine, I couldn't think of the word. Thank you.
You can do that to an extent, of course, but the guy who, is saying, would you like fries with that, usually has to be there. Now, I say usually because about 20 years ago, McDonald's decided that they were going to outsource their drive-thrus. They were going to do a test. This is an absolutely true story. I'll never forget it. Now, where they decided to do the test was Honolulu. And the best part of all, it gets much better than that. Much better than that.
I'm laughing because I know people who live in Hawaii, so I know why that's funny.
Well, right. So there it was, right in Honolulu. And the call center that it was outsourced to was in El Paso. Now, as you probably know, half of the staffers probably lived in Juarez. And so it was only a few week test before McDonald's realized that maybe this wasn't in their best interest. But that said, I'm sure that there are more and more outsourcing. But even so, there are jobs that, stockers at the grocery store, the guy at the deli counter who wasn't there today, so the deli counter was closed. You cannot do that from home, no matter what you think.
I used to work the meat slicer at 7-Eleven. I couldn't do it from home.
Well, that's right. That's right. You're not going to computerize the meat slicer. You're not going to let the customer self-serve at the meat slicer. Although I will say
that would just be wrong. We'd be losing fingers all over the place.
Of course. I will say that I was a little surprised that in one of the upscale supermarkets I saw in Scottsdale, the bread slicer was self-service, and I thought, what?
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. And I thought, what could go wrong here?
Hell of an insurance plan.
Yeah, I don't know, but there it was sitting out there, So, but I haven't seen it yet with the meat slicer. So yeah, but it's all fun and games. But what's going on here? There's a piece of the economy that I no longer understand.
Me neither. I don't understand it either. Yeah. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know where people are getting. I mean, I know there's. When I hear social media influencer, I think, that a job? That's a job now.
It can be, but you see, the percentage of people who make money doing that is infinitesimally small. You'll see stories about people who make, teenager who's making $7 million a year. Yeah, that's one. There's several people, but percentage-wise, it's not the majority, to say the least, and that's the understatement of 2023. It's a very small percentage of people. And yes, you can do a Patreon thing and, make some chump change and all that, and that's fine. But, you won't be able to pay for the sandwiches you buy at the deli counter with that. So I don't get it. And I've mentioned this many times, and no one has ever come up with a credible answer for me.
because if we could all figure out how to make money being social media influencers, why wouldn't we all be doing it?
I don't know. You couldn't pay me to want to do that. But again, that's not the majority of people. And the young people who do that, they generally love doing it. And a couple of them strike it rich. And most of them, you know, can't buy sandwiches. So let's keep Chelsea in our hearts and keep me posted on what you hear.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh, there's plenty of room for you. Maybe you've got an answer. That would be one. By the way, you did have answers on the lint trap. We thank Chris in Columbus. We thank Carol, who not only does my show prep, but obviously solves my life's problems. The lint trap was on top of the dryer, you know, right from the top part you accessed it. Never saw that before. When I did access it, I realized, oh my God, I was closer to burning down the house than I realized. Yeah. Many years ago on Canadian radio, there was a network show at night, Rona After Dark. And yeah, she was like from Vancouver, but you know, you'd hear it all the way to Newfoundland. It was a pretty good show. But one night, her topic was creative things to do with dryer lint. And so I know you think this show is weird, but I thought to myself, oh my God, I'm looking at this. I'm not sure, but I think you could, you know, reconstruct stuffed animals with this stuff. So yeah, I'm sure Rona would have been proud. So we'll get to Elizabeth in Rock Falls, and we got Tom in Covington, and plenty of room for you on WGN Radio.
Great.
Oh, it's now. I thought it was 11:17. It's 10:17. We're going to talk about the CC Pocket Radio. And, you know, Adam told me this, too, so clearly my mind is like a sieve. But I love talking about the Sea Crane products because Bob Crane should be knighted. Years ago, he was as disgusted as most of us were with the state of radio reception on most of the AM and FM radios that were out there, if not all. And so he determined that he was going to develop radios that just had killer reception, and he has done it. And there are so many from which to choose. And the CC Pocket is one of my favorites because you really can put it in your pocket. And for a pocket radio, you're not going to find something more selective than this. It is just terrific. It's got unbeatable AM and FM reception. It's digital, so you get the five presets. You know, you can set your favorite stations, and you can listen with a built-in speaker. And it's better than you'd expect for something you're holding in your hand. But they include the CC earbuds, and the quality is just amazing. And especially if you like to listen to talk radio, voice clarity is just second to none. So the memory buttons, like I say, can instantly select your favorite stations. You can see where you are on the dial. And it makes a great emergency radio because it's got a lighted dial and the NOAA weather band with an emergency alert. So you have this near you when, you know, the storms are rolling in. You'll know about it because your radio will tell you. That's really neat. It's light, it's durable, it's easy to hold, rubber sides and a pocket clip. You can put it right in your purse if you're a gal. You can put it right in your pocket if you're a guy. And right now, the Sea Crane Company is offering free standard shipping on the CC Pocket Radio. You can order it by phone anytime at 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. You know, I say anytime. I don't really know if that's true because the Sea Crane Company doesn't outsource anything. You're really talking to them. So you might need to call back tomorrow. I don't know, but I'll tell you what you can do. You can go to their website right now. And it is a great website. Not only great products like the CC Pocket, but wonderful information as well. And that's ccradio.com, ccradio.com. If you haven't, you can sign up for the Sea Crane newsletter and be the first to know about all sorts of exclusive offers like this one, free shipping on the CC Pocket. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio.
I'm so glad she's mine, 'cause she holds me tight.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's a fine example of Northern Soul. That's J.J. Barnes' Real Humdinger, which was his first chart record. It was on Rick-Tick in 1966. Got to number 18, I think, on the R&B charts, 80 on the pop charts. Doing that from memory, but I think it's close. Sadly, J.J. left us. Yeah, died December. And I hadn't known that. Died Saturday, December 10th, 2022, 79 years old. Interesting guy. He had done a number of things in Detroit. His dad was a gospel singer, in fact, sung lower lead with the Evangelist Singers and the Flying Clouds. And J.J. was a teenager when he was signed by McKay and then Rick-Tick. He worked at Motown, but not as an artist, as a songwriter. And he left and did some things on Groovesville, Don Davis's label, and recorded some stuff with Edwin Starr and Steve Mancha. The Holidays, that was the group at the time. And it was interesting because I think it was Edwin who encouraged J.J. to move to the U.K., because of Northern Soul, and which has a definitive beat, to say the least, and Real Humdinger certainly qualifies as a standard. But not only Northern Soul fans. It was only a couple months ago that he was performing at Detroit A-Go-Go in October, but sadly no longer with us. So rest in peace, J.J. Barnes. 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. So Elizabeth, maybe she's going to tell me how people are getting away with not working. So Elizabeth, what's the deal?
Hi, Raleigh. It's so good to hear you back.
Thank you.
Both you and John. I sent so many prayers your way, and especially for you, because sometimes it's harder for the person that's standing by. Mm.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
I know how you felt in some ways.
Yeah.
So anyway, my grandson is a full-time student at Northern Illinois University, but he works weekends at a fast food place here in town. And they have people lined up waiting to work there. And it's because the owners treat everyone so well.
Oh, that's nice.
And I think that's part of the problem, maybe.
I agree. No.
The more harried people get, the worse they treat their workers.
Oh, I agree 100%. I absolutely understand why people don't want to do these jobs. You know, I'm with them 1,000% on that. You're right. And bosses from hell are known throughout the land. But my question is, okay, you don't want to do that, but how are you getting away with not working? Because there are so many jobs available and people are not working them. So what are they doing to live?
I have no idea. Here in Illinois is a pretty bad state. Anyway.
Yeah. Oh, but, yeah. But no, you talk about fast food in Illinois. I mean, I used to love Beefaroo in Rockford. I thought it was just terrific.
Oh, so. There was one here in Sterling, right across the river,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, you say that past tense. Did it close?
Pardon?
I say you said that past tense. Did it close?
Yes, it closed.
Oh, a long time ago.
But I always thought you were in Chicago. I don't know where I got that idea.
Well, I'm certainly there in spirit. I was supposed to be there in reality. And you know, it's interesting because, of course, John's problems, obviously from a stroke, are acute. Mine are chronic. And what stopped the move a few years ago was my own health, which is not good, to say the least. And then, you know, we always talked about, well, we'll get there eventually. Well, eventually just wound up being a lot longer than I realized.
Happens.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, but you know, I'm not alone. Ari and Samuelson did the show most of the time from Arizona as well.
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, and Steve and Johnny, of course, half the time were in Florida. You know, that's the neat thing. Yeah, you can, you know, that's the neat thing about it. You can do it from anywhere. And I people always said I was one of the first because I have not worked inside a radio building since the 90s. You know, the fact when it became possible not to do it, I was the first person to say, I'm out of here. And at the time, management would resent it. And, you know, I would say, hey, I'm delivering the exact same product. You got no problems. And now it's commonplace. So I was talking to a friend who I knew 25 years ago, and he said, you know, you were a real trailblazer. Now everybody does it.
Well, that's nice. It's nice you can be there.
Yeah.
Can I change the subject for a minute?
Yeah.
There's a famous musician who was born right here where I am in Rock Falls, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And he's married to a famous singer. Do you have any idea who it is?
Are we talking pop musician?
No, he was a jazz drummer, Louis Belson.
Oh, okay, of course, absolutely. Well, they still have the Belson Music Festival in Rock Falls, don't they?
Yes, just had it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so yes.
It's something to behold. All day long, there's drummers under a competition.
Yeah.
All ages. And then at night, there's a grand display of everyone's talent. It's really fun.
Well, it is, and that's a that's a well-known annual festival, and so sure. I think it was last June was the last one I knew about.
Oh, you're talking. There are Louis Belson days in June, but
right.
There was a percussion palooza.
Okay.
And the highest award is a Louis Belson award in that drum contest.
Wow.
He used to come back and go to the grade schools and high schools here and work with students. Even when he was very famous, he would come back and help kids.
No, I just looked it up. Yeah, the Percussion Palooza, February 27th, Rock Falls High School, the 9th annual. So, so that's why I didn't know about it. It's only 9 years old. But even so, 9 years, that's pretty good. And Rock Falls High apparently puts this on. That's wonderful.
It is. It's a lot of fun to go to if you can stand the noise.
Oh, absolutely. Well,
there was one group that had steel drums. Oh, I just felt like I was in the Caribbean again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's nothing like a great drum solo, really. So, yeah.
Well,
neat.
I'll have one music request then.
Yes.
For Pearl Bailey.
Okay.
Zing. Want the strings
of my heart. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Normally I play it by the Coasters, but I can play it by Pearl Bailey too.
Okay.
I'll do it
she
for you.
She was quite a performer.
Oh, of course. Of course. I liked her Christmas song, 10-pound bag of money.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I'll play some of that too.
I saw her on the Ed Sullivan Show. A replay of it.
Uh-huh.
And she was dancing around with him. She had him smiling and laughing, and he ended up kissing her on the lips.
Oh, that's great. That's just great. Yeah, and I could see why he would be a fan. And it was certainly his generation. She started out in vaudeville and then on Broadway and all that. So yeah.
She did Hello Dolly, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I think she got a Tony for the all black production of that.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly died in Philadelphia in 1990.
Right.
So
and she had just gotten I forget what year she'd gotten a degree from Georgetown University School of Theology.
Wow. Why not? Why not?
She's gotten honorary degrees, and she wanted to really win one by herself.
Yeah. Well, good for her. Good for her.
So, but I love the way she would sing, and then she would say, "Are you comfortable, honey?"
Yeah. 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 All right. Well, I will get that on for you, and I'll also let you hear her 10-pound bag of money. All right. All right. Thanks.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Lily.
Good deal.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. So, she was wonderful. No doubt about it. And true entertainers. I think the Ed Sullivan clips, by the way, are on YouTube if you want to see some of those. So, 888-876-5593. You'll get to Tom and Covington. We got Jan in Lake Villa, Illinois. Dryer suggestion. Well, now that I know where the lint trap is, I've solved that problem. But and it is the noisiest damn dryer, too. All right. All that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
Dear, when you smiled at me, I heard a melody. It haunted me from the start. Something inside of me started a symphony. Sing with the strings of my heart. Breath of spring. robin sing about a nest set away apart. All nature seemed to be in perfect harmony. Sing, are you all right, honey? With the strings of my heart. Your eyes made skies seem blue again. What else could I do again but keep repeating through again, I love you. Are you sure you're comfy, honey? I still recall the thrill. I guess I always will. I hope 'twill never depart.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and of course that's Pearl Bailey, and probably my favorite version of that, actually. That was June of 1956, and it was actually recorded 21 years before that. It was first recorded in 1935, and then 1940, Judy Garland had it, and of course the Coasters later in 1958. That was pretty much a hit for the Skyliners, also did it in 58. Jesse Belvin, Joni James, Jimmy Ricks, yeah, the Furies, Kirby Stone. Oh man, I laugh at that. PJ Proby recorded it. The Tramps, yeah, the Hold Back the Night Tramps and all that. And on the list, the Volans did it. And you name it, over 112 versions. So very, very popular song. But yeah, so I looked for 10 pound. Turned out it was a 5 pound. Yeah, 5 pound bag of money. And since we had not, well, we usually do play around Christmas, but we'll see if it sounds familiar to you.
Hey Santa Claus, you want to make me happy this year? Listen to me, honey. Give Pearl something that'll be of some use to me, like a 5 pound box of money. Now there's a little gift. It's loaded with lots of sentiment. See, whenever I get blue, Santa, I'm gonna think of you. But at the same time, that will change the pay my rent, you see? Now, money isn't everything. There's no two ways about it. But while we're here, Santa dear, it's much better with than without it. So
now you see, if all the Christmas songs sounded like that, I would like the Christmas format all the time. Actually, there's a flip side on Roulette in 1959, and she co-wrote it. So there. All right, 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. So let's find out about the dryer suggestion from Jane in Lake Villa. How's it going, Jane?
Hi, Raleigh. I'm doing fine. I'm glad everyone's doing good with you.
Yes, thanks.
I have a suggestion. Did you find the lint trap?
Yes, it's on the top. I had no idea. It's on the top of the thing.
Ah, because I had one that was just inside the door.
That's right. It's so funny you say that, because that was the second place I was looking, and I was so determined it was there, I damn near took the door apart. And it turns out it's on the top of it. And I don't know who designed that, but boy, it was just full.
Well, the best thing to do is just run it a little bit without anything in it to capture any that was left in there.
Well, that's a good idea. I will give that a try.
And I also have an idea about all these people that are not working.
Yes.
A lot of people got those checks from the government.
Yeah.
Everything was going on. That really didn't need the checks because, you know, Grandma and Grandpa might have been on Social Security. And a lot of people were still working, and they still got the checks because they were essential workers. But they still sent the checks out anyway.
That's interesting. So maybe they haven't run through it yet.
Well, the thing is If a lot of people didn't need the money, they probably gave it to the kids that needed the money so they didn't have to go out and work.
Yeah, but what's going on now? Unless they save that money, no more checks.
Well, I don't know.
See, that's the thing. I kind of got it when those checks were flowing, but now that they've stopped, what have they come up with that the rest of us don't know?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Either that or they're winning more lottery tickets than we thought.
Well, yeah. I've told this story many times, but years ago when my adopted mom was alive, and she was, you know, quite elderly and quite sick, you know, I said, well, why don't you play the lottery? And she looked at me and she said, I can't win. I said, why not? She said, I watch it every Saturday night on television and no one who speaks English can win. And, you know, I thought to myself, yeah, they would have the big spin in California on Saturday nights. And she was right. You know, virtually everybody who was doing that spin was, you know, from a third world country.
Yeah. Well, it's a world that is unbelievable anymore. You can't explain anything.
No, no. And it's scary. You know, I mean, I was thinking earlier today, right after World War II, as we were ushering the 50s, I mean, we just had such a euphoria that things were good and solid. And even through the 60s, you know, I mean, yes, there was all sorts of turbulence. But for the most part, we believed in it. You know, and the 70s were pretty strong. Now, I think that most people are waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Everything, you know, is circular.
Yes.
And I think what happened about 80 to 100 years ago,
yes,
is going to come back and bite us.
Well,
real soon.
I wouldn't be surprised. I agree. It's absolutely cyclical. You're 100% right about that. And of course, the Federal Reserve is neither federal nor a reserve. So yes, that scares the living daylights out of me.
Yeah. What scares me is what's going to happen another 20-30 years from now. Luckily, you know, I'm, you know, at the other end of the line. Yeah,
you and me both. I won't be here, exactly.
Right. And I feel sorry for people that are starting out or has little kids, and I'm wondering what kind of world are we leaving.
Yeah,
you know,
scares me. Certainly a paradigm change because, you know, I've always said the advent of digital, which really started with the Industrial Revolution, that's changed the scope of mankind on Earth to such a degree that it will be very tumultuous before we see the other side. And, of course, you and I won't see the other side, and that's fine by me. But I think people who are very, very young today probably will happily live, you know, through the other side. But I think people who are working age now, whoa, boy, batting down the hatches.
Yeah, you got that right.
Yeah. I hope we're wrong, but I don't think we are.
But I'm glad John's doing better.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you're doing better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm still kind of walking into walls, but I'm just delighted to be talking to you, and I hope you'll call me soon.
Oh, well, I listen to you every night.
Thank you.
I just wish it was a little longer because I'm getting those you know, the other subscription programming.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. Sadly, overnights used to be great in the days of Herb Jepko and things like that, and you know, all the stations had their own programming as well. And now, yeah, it's Newton B. Minow's Vast Wasteland come to pass.
Yeah, I miss Steve and Johnny.
Well,
I'm glad they're on Saturday nights.
I am too. And you know, certainly, if they wanted to do overnights, they would be doing it right now. But
yeah,
you know, you get to that point in life where Saturday nights is kind of enough.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them a bit. But yes, it'd be nice to clone them. I mean, I wish we could have cloned Eddie Schwartz before he died.
Oh, I miss him.
Yeah.
He had some really good programs.
Yes, he did. And he was so in tune with Chicago. He told me, you know, I remember when I'd come to town, we'd drive around and, you know, I'd see everything. And he would tell me more stories that made sense that I never knew before Eddie filled me in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a good guy.
Yes, he was. I agree. Well, thank you, thank you, thank you for calling, and do it again soon.
Okay.
Okay.
You have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And we'll pick it up there next hour on WGN Radio.
Oh, I wake up in the morning with my hair down and my eyes, and she says hi. And I stumble to the breakfast table while the kids are going off to school goodbye. And she reaches out and takes my hand, squeezes it, and says,
how you feeling,
hon? And I look across at smiling lips that warm my heart and see my morning sun. And if that's not loving me, then all I gotta say, oh, God didn't make little green apples. It don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime. And there's no such thing as Dr. Seuss, Disneyland, Mother Goose is no nursery rhyme. God didn't make little green apples. It don't rain in Indianapolis in the summertime. And when myself is feeling low, I think about her face aglow to ease my mind.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that, of course, is O.C. Smith. And it was Jim and Gurney who requested that a while back, and I meant to play it and never did, so now we finally got around to it. And that was his biggest hit and his second hit, actually. The first chart record he had was earlier in 1968, The Son of Hickory Hollis Tramp, and that was a Dallas Frazier tune, which I don't know, made it somewhere in the 30s on the pop charts. And then it was Bobby Russell who wrote Little Green Apples, and record royalty in that. As far as everybody involved in that on Columbia, it H.B. Barnum arranged it, Jerry Fuller produced it, and it was just a smash. Though I got to say, not my favorite O.C. Smith record. I still go with On Easy Street for that. But nonetheless, we finally, poor Jim, yeah, hope he's still with us. Hope he heard Little Green Apples. Tom in Covington, welcome to WGN Radio. What's up tonight, Tom?
Oh, hi, Raleigh. How are you? Curious to find out how John's doing, because I haven't heard lately.
Well, he answered the phone. Did you talk to him?
I thought that was John, but
yep,
he didn't seem to recognize me.
Oh, really? Well, I'll bet you he did, because your name is on the screen big as life, so I think he did.
Yeah, well, I told him who I was. Yeah. I thought that was him, but I wasn't expecting him to answer.
Right? No, absolutely. No, he's perfectly fine, except he doesn't have control of the left side of his body, so he's got to relearn that. He's got the strength, but not the coordination. So that's what the therapy is all about. But mentally, it was interesting today. He did another assessment, and I was looking over his shoulder, and I thought to myself, I haven't had a stroke, and I don't do as well on these as he does. So he's just fine.
Yeah, well, it sounded exactly like
him. Yeah, absolutely.
But his reaction to me, it didn't sound like he recognized me.
Oh, really? I think he did. I think
he
did.
I lost track of things. You still doing trivia on Monday night?
Absolutely, we did trivia this past Monday night. We only had an hour and a half of it because of the ball game, but I believe it is a full hour of Monday night trivia this coming Monday. Now, Carol was kind enough to let me know what the week is like next week, because there are some interruptions, but Monday is a full show, and then Tuesday we're on right after Blackhawks hockey, so probably around 11 Central. Then Wednesday, same deal, around 11 Central, right after the NCAA tournament, the first four. And then Thursday, probably about 10:30 Central, right after Blackhawks. So Monday is a full show, though. And, of course, daylight savings time happens over the weekend, from what I understand, which, of course, does not affect us here, but dramatically affects when I start doing the show, because it does affect Chicago and everybody else. So so for us, instead of a 9 o'clock start, it becomes an 8 o'clock start.
Yeah, I wish they'd do away with that nonsense.
Well, I'm a little worried. Of course, I do too. But, you see, Arizona, if they did away with it, I would like Arizona to stay on Mountain Time. And that's not what the legislature here wants to do. If they do away with it entirely, Arizona wants to be on the same time zone as California. And I don't want that. I just don't, because then that makes it 3 hours to deal with the East Coast, and, you know, I can't get anything done. So I would like them to stay on Mountain, but, of course, they're Mountain Standard, and they don't want to become Mountain Daylight all the time. So
yeah, well, I fell asleep Monday night, so I didn't get to hear anything of you.
Yeah, well, you know, this show will do that to you. But yeah, it was an hour and a half. We did trivia. We had some winners. And we'll do it again Monday night. We revealed our straggler question that nobody got the answer to, but we did reveal it. And so it'll be a new question on Monday with new bumper stumpers. And I have absolutely no idea what it'll be, but I have between now and then to think about it.
What was the straggler that you...
Oh, yes, yes. 1 in 10 people do this idiot thing on their computers. And the answer is, use the word password as their password.
Yeah, I remember hearing.
Yeah.
That was the thing never to do.
Well, of course not. And, you know, if this were 30 years ago, I would say, yeah, I got that. But now, and apparently 20 years ago, it was 1 in 8 people were doing it. Well, we haven't really come a long way since then.
Well, there's another thing that people... A lot of people, I don't think, realize that once they put something on the internet, it's gone.
Well, once they put it on the internet, it's there forever, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, of course. Absolutely. And, you know, you can wind up in all sorts of places if you don't know what you're doing. And, yeah, sadly. And
well, it's instantly around the world.
Well, right, and the idea that, and you know, actually with adults, it isn't a big problem. I worry tremendously for kids because, you know, teenagers especially, you go through individuation, you try on different identities and all that, and normally, societally, you know, you outgrow it and then you become an adult, but now, no matter what you do, really, from cradle to grave, will be memorialized forever. And I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd want my seventh grade self to live in infamy.
No, I don't think so.
Right, but that's what these kids deal with, and they don't understand that, and there's no way for them to understand it because they don't, you know, have the ability to reason it. And so I do worry about that, is that you know, we've seen it already, for instance, idiots who put things online who then go for jobs a couple years later and find out that they're not getting the job because the employer did a search from, you know, all their social media. But it's going to be much worse than that. And I have no idea how that will, you know, shape society, but I think it will affect kids tremendously.
Well, I think it has to, the way it goes.
Yep. So, you know, like I say, very different paradigm. The world is not like it was, and I'm glad I'm not young, but that's spoken like an old person.
Yeah, well, I may be around a few more years, but I think most of this stuff is going to be beyond me.
Oh, of course, and it won't affect you. But again, I wish there was a way for kids to understand. You know, when we were young, teachers threatened us with our permanent record. Well, hell, the internet is the permanent record. In our case, there was no permanent record. It was a crock start to finish. But today, the internet is a permanent record that is really frightening to think it'll be there forever.
Yeah, when I was, you know, school age, I can't think of one of my teachers that wasn't a red-blooded American solid citizen, but now you don't know what you get.
Oh, well, it's very different all the way around, and that's a political subject that will stay away from them, but as I've often said, you want to see communism in action, just look at the teachers' unions. All right, so moving right along. So, all right, Tom, good to hear from you.
Well, I'm glad he's doing okay.
Yes, he is. It's going to be a grueling year of therapy, but he's going to be fine. I just ordered him a version of Tinker Toys because that's a great way for hand-to-eye coordination. So he'll be building things.
I didn't know they still made them.
Well, they do, but they're plastic. However, there are some knockoffs that are still wood. And I got 3 different kinds, and they're coming tomorrow. And so, yes, Tinker Toys are absolutely... Hasbro bought it years ago, but they're plastic, you know, so you can get 200 pieces for, you know, very little money. But who wants plastic? They're supposed to be wood. And so I went with 3 different companies that make them in wood, and we'll see what John creates.
Yeah, when I was... I guess I was about 2 years old. I got a little wagon that you pulled with a rope, and it was full of alphabet blocks.
Yes,
And I quickly demolished the wagon, but I still have the block.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, and you can see it on eBay and stuff. There are people who have, you know, the vintage stuff that's still, you know, still made out of the wood and all that kind of stuff. But as far as the new stuff sold today, if it's a Tinker Toy, it is all plastic, unfortunately.
Well, I was just amazed to find out that they still made them.
Well, like I say, Hasbro. You know, big toy. Well, you know, I'll tell you how out of it I am. When it was suggested that he do something like that, I said to John, well, let's just go to Toys R Us. And he looked at me like I'd lost my mind. He says, Raleigh, Toys R Us doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't? You know, shows you what I know. I guess it's probably still online. And I know they've got it in Canada. But I don't know of any freestanding Toys R Us's, so I've got to look for that.
So, yeah, I didn't know that was gone either.
Well, they filed for bankruptcy about 6 years ago, and I think they closed their last retail stores. I didn't realize they were all gone, but apparently there's like kiosks inside Macy's or something. So yeah, but it was a surprise because of course they did so well for so long, but nope, bankruptcy in 2017.
Yeah, I tried to look up, it's been probably been 20 years trying to find out who owned what, and just going through the books at the library, trying to find out who owned a company I was trying to find. Boy, was that a maze.
Well, now you can do it easily because it's all online. You know, I don't care what it is. You can find it online as far as that. Of course, any more, who owns it? Some vulture capital company, you know. So, all right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, it's interesting times coming, and I won't be here to see it, but many will live through it. And I think, you know, that's the ancient Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times. Well, we will be living in them. Always good to hear from you, Tom. What?
I heard a little bit of you describing your partial move down to the Phoenix area.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sure more will come out about that as time goes on, but I'm still walking into walls.
Yeah, I've got to decide what to do with my record collection and all that stuff. And
well, you're in trouble because unless the guy in Brazil, you know, there's a guy in Brazil who's the heir to like a bus fortune, and he wants to buy every record ever made. And so you might have a chance with him. But other than that, vinyl is something that very, very, very few entities are interested in.
Yeah, well, it's I estimate it weighs about 50 tons, so.
Yeah, well, you know, but I mean, if somebody really wanted it, they'd. Now, of course, if you're really trying to sell it, you got to know what's in it. And I don't know if you have a complete catalog of what it is, but usually that's daunting.
Yeah, well, I put a lot of it on the computer, but my site's gotten worse than my ambition, so I'm behind on that.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I mean, I couldn't begin to tell anybody, nor would I try. But, yeah, I know the Smithsonian expressed an interest in Val Shively, but I think that they just wanted him to donate it to them. He's like, no, I don't think that's going to be happening.
Yeah, I've got to get a copy of your theme song.
Oh, do-do-do-ba-a, yeah. And, well, that's online. I'm sure you can just rip it from YouTube or something, but that's Bert Keys on Clock.
I hope he's got some copies of it.
Bert Keys?
Yeah.
Oh, I think there are a number of copies of it that are out there, but you can easily, like I say, pick it up online. All right.
Yeah.
Well, good to talk to you, Tom. Thank you.
Okay.
All
bye.
Right. So 888-876-5593 is 888-RALEIGH. And yeah, I will get into, and by the way, I'm very disappointed that no one's wanted to talk about the Murdaugh verdict, and even Detective Chuck has left me in a lurch here, haven't heard from him about it, but I was just reading about a story in Medicine Hat. Medicine Hat, by the way, is the sunniest spot in Canada. It's in Alberta, in southern Alberta. There was a murder there a while ago that was very interesting, because it was a 12-year-old girl who massacred her family and killed her mother, father, and brother. And apparently, this 12-year-old, it was in conjunction with her 23-year-old boyfriend right there. And so, ultimately, who, by the way, claimed he was a werewolf, but that's another story. Eventually, the cops realized that the kid, the 12-year-old, did this and, you know, stabbed them all to death. And the reason for killing the brother, by the way, is she said she didn't want to leave him as an orphan. So the 23-year-old boyfriend, for his part in this, got life in prison. But the 12-year-old, and this is what interests me, the 12-year-old was too young to be prosecuted as an adult, so she got 6 years in prison and then 4 years of rehabilitation, and then that's it. And, of course, she continued her education while she was incarcerated. And when she was finally released, she's living in an undisclosed location under an undisclosed name. And you have a number of the officers who were involved in arriving at the scene in 2006 when this crime happened. And she was released, by the way. The girl was released in 2016. And all the cops to this day say biggest fear is she has not been rehabilitated, that she hasn't moved forward. But who knows? Yeah. And, of course, more recently, we heard about the first grader in the Norfolk area who, you know, shot his teacher. And, of course, we don't have any provisions in the judicial system for young kids doing stuff like this. But when a 12-year-old has murdered her parents in cold blood, that is kind of chilling that in under 10 years, she's completely free and clear from the system. Yeah, I'd love to know where she is now. 888-876-5593 is WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Now, here's a soap opera for you. All right. You probably have heard that if you're into obscure Motown as Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers. No. It's Bobby Taylor and the Originals. All right. Here's what happened. Marvin Gaye was a co-writer of that, and the Originals did the song, but Bobby Taylor was singing lead. Now, nothing happened to it, but later, Berry Gordy really didn't want Marvin Gaye to produce, even though Marvin Gaye really did want to produce and wanted to do his own stuff. And he rewrote the bells I hear, as Baby I'm For Real. Had the Originals, yes, still the Originals, the same group that was back in Bobby Taylor and that. There were no Vancouvers at this point, regardless of what the label might have later said. But in any event, of course, Baby I'm For Real by the Originals becomes very well known. And then later you see on some of the Bobby Taylor and the Vancouvers compilations that, you know, the bells. And you say, wow, what is this? Well, that is Bobby Taylor. It's not the Vancouvers. It is the Originals. And it was the original version of Baby I'm For Real when it was the bells. All right. Any questions? Right. Yes, I know. 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh. And all right. Ask and I shall receive. Detective Chuck is calling. Well, I am thrilled about this. Welcome. Welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, and I do have to confess I was going to call last night, but I fell asleep.
Ah, well, sleep is sacred.
So halfway through the show, anyway, yeah. John sounded good, and yeah. I thanked him for all my packages that I received as I sent you an email, and I think he's the best packer I've ever seen, man. I had a hard time unwrapping all that stuff.
Well, I'm glad it arrived.
Seriously. Yeah, I'm, anyway, real quick, on the that you were talking about the teenage murders and so forth, just I don't know what the laws are in every state. I think they're fairly similar. When I retired in Virginia, there was a presumption that up to 8 years old, in other words, under 8 years old, a person could not make, they could not form the intent to commit any crime, including murder.
Right.
And then there was a another level between 8 and 14, which required a hearing for a juvenile court judge to determine whether a person can even be tried. And then beyond 14 or 15, then a juvenile could be tried as an adult if the court determined that. So that's pretty standard everywhere, but, you know, probably the deeper south and further west you go, it could change a little bit, you know.
It's getting scary, you know, like the first grader who shot his teacher. You know, you normally wouldn't think that there could ever be an adult tried for that. But you also don't think that first graders have guns and are shooting people. But yeah, this 12-year-old girl murdering her parents, I'd love to know where she is now because she's totally free.
Well, she murdered her parents, but I'd like to know, what was the relationship that allowed that the parents, if they did this, allowed the 12-year-old to form a relationship with a 20-some-year-old adult man?
See, that was exactly what caused the murder. They were intent on stopping this. They were having a fit.
Mm-hmm. See, I, having raised three daughters, also a son, but three daughters, I'd have went to jail before I'd have let any of my girls date anybody that was an adult when they were teenagers.
Of course.
17 and 18, because I'm old school, I'm hard-headed, and you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Of course.
I monitored most of the dating, but then again, it's a different time today, obviously, you know, but you'd still wonder...
How it got that.
Probably could have.
Yeah, early on.
If they couldn't have handled her, they may have had to have the courts intervene, but then that's a drastic step also, you know.
Oh, sure it is. Yeah, either way. And of course, you know, parents are in denial when stuff like that happens. But my God, not only was he 23, but he was 23-year-old. He was a total goth. He's wearing blood around his neck. I mean, there was every reason for every bell to go off in these parents' heads to, you know, run like the devil. But, you know, that's what happened. All right, now on to the murder of the really the decade. I got asked, was the 45-minute deliberation surprising to you?
You mean 2 hours and 45 minutes?
Yeah, right. Sorry about that. Yes.
Yeah, little under 3. Not really. I have to confess, Raleigh, I kind of lost interest in it because it was going on so long.
Yes.
I was concerned way back that because the investigation was taking so long that they might have bungled everything up, but I have to apologize to SLED and the rest of the South Carolina law enforcement. They were just being very vigilant. They did their good job. I think any criticism is very nitpicky. You know, if you want to criticize what the enforcers did and so forth, I think they did a good job. And coming back that quick really didn't surprise me after I saw... I didn't really watch the trial, but my oldest daughter that lives here in South Carolina, she followed it, and she'd call me every day and give me an update. And based on all that, you know, it didn't surprise me, really. But, you know, it ain't over yet either, because they're going to revisit.
Oh, of course.
I think what I got from the, if you saw the interview of the head of SLED, the chief of SLED, if you read between the lines there, it seems like they're waiting till this trial, finished up. And then excuse me, and I think they're going to go back and reopen those the murder of the housekeeper,
yes,
and also the fake hit and run on the highway.
Right.
I think they're going to reopen those.
And it should. They absolutely should. You know, I, like you, lost interest, and then, of course, all hell was breaking loose, so I didn't have much time to do anything. But from what I saw about the alleged motivation, it just didn't seem like that was sufficient to murder anybody. You know, the idea that he decided he's going to kill his wife and son to cover up his crimes? I mean, that's so out there.
You know, since he had a big court appearance coming up, I forget whether it was civil or criminal or both, I can't remember, and then the murders happened 3 days before that. So if you take that approach, then you have a multifaceted motive, most of which was financial, and the fact that he thought that by getting rid of them, who knew about a lot of his crimes, some of which they participated in, like maybe the housekeeper, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes.
I think that was his strategy, and I don't think it was real smart. And I had and talking to my son today, he has a theory that the roadside attempted murder of himself by that guy,
right?
That he thinks if that hadn't gone wrong, that possibly Alex was then going to say, this guy tried to shoot me, and he's also, I believe, you know, he's telling law enforcement that he murdered my family.
Yes.
Think about that.
Yes.
You know, you could formulate a lot of different scenarios for this about what was going on in his mind, really.
Yeah, this is one sick puppy all the way around. But I'm just baffled that anybody would, you know, in their own mind think, well, I'll just kill my wife and my kid. That'll get me off. You know.
Well, but think about all the things that he did all through his legal life.
Right.
Think it's just like me and my partner were talking about last night. He stole from the dead.
Right.
He stole from his firm. He stole from his clients, some of which were dead, which means you're stealing from their estates.
Right.
That is a very sinister individual that does that, and we investigated cases like that.
Sure.
We had a case in Virginia with my partner's case I helped him with real quick. And it was not the Murrah's type thing, but almost as big. A big legal family in Virginia, I won't say where.
Yeah.
They were into politics. They were into judgeships. They were into everything else. And my partner picked up a case where somebody was stealing from the estates of elderly people. It ended up being the wife of one of the senior partners who was a paralegal at this firm.
Oh, man.
Yeah, seriously. And I mean, and what we did on that, and I'm sure you know, in the Murrah case is similar to that. We took that, we did a full investigation, did a search warrant of the law firm. It would be like going into the Murrahs, just Chuck and Jim show up one day, knock on the door, we got a search warrant.
Yeah.
And we went in there, and they were cooperative. Of course, they didn't, until they saw the search warrant, they didn't know what we were there after.
Right.
And they pulled out the records, we did everything, then we took the case directly to the grand jury, got an indictment. Before we could arrest the woman, they shipped her off, I swear to God, they shipped her off to Texas, and next thing we know, she's in a mental institution.
Oh, no.
But God bless Texas. We was able to extradite her and pull her out of the mental institution or whatever you want to call it. And she was, at the time, she was probably in her 70s, but she started then acting like she was 90.
Right.
So she could get sympathy when she went to court. But just a great case. I could write a book on the case.
So how did it come out? Was she convicted?
Well, here's the thing. You know how the justice system is, right?
Yes.
She pulls, okay, we get her back to Virginia. In fact, when our female partner and Jim flew back on a late Saturday night from Texas, I picked them up in the airport, right? I picked them up in the airport. This woman never saw me in my life. She didn't know me from squat. I'm driving the car. Cindy and the woman's riding in the back. Jim's riding with me in the front. And we're going from Washington, Reagan Airport, and we got to go to our headquarters, you know, 20 minutes, 15, 30 minute ride, whatever.
Yeah.
And this woman, this is how crazy some of these people are. She starts going off on me in the car.
No.
In other words, she says, I hate you. The guy that's driving the car, I hate you. are you the one that framed me in this case? I mean, I swear to God, you know. So I don't know if that was an act. I don't know if it was an act or what. So we get her back to the station. She did not talk, obviously, because she comes from a family of lawyers. So she didn't talk. We ran her through the whole system, fingerprinting, handwriting. We spent 4 hours just, you know, goofballing her, right?
Yeah.
So what happens is, of course, they get the best lawyers in the world, kind of maybe like the Murrahs. And luckily she pulled the oldest judge who was about her age, who was beyond retirement age, and he allowed them to continue the case until he retired, and then another judge took the case over. She took a plea, and she died before she served a day in prison. And that process took about three or four years.
Oh,
and we were
man.
Disgusted, really. But we did get restitution.
Good.
The firm and the family did pay millions of dollars in restitution. We were able to get that for the estates of the families that were deceased. But she was stealing from the dead, literally. The other interesting thing is there was one case, Raleigh, and it was not only a client of the firm that they were managing her estate, but they were also a neighbor in a neighborhood, and this woman was very elderly. We even suspected and tried to prove that she may have killed that woman. And we actually at one time thought she did, until we found witnesses that were in Florida that said, no, we were in the kitchen when the woman fell and hit her head.
Oh,
it was not the woman, I swear to God. So we actually thought that she had killed this woman, which would be kind of like the Murrah housekeeper type situation.
Yeah.
You know?
So
those cases do happen. They do happen, and it happens that way. But in that case, you wonder, was justice really served? You know, because I love the judge. He was a great guy. I knew him when he was a defense attorney. But the older he got, the less ability he had to really deal with it and sentence some of these people who were really egregious people. They didn't kill anybody, but they did. One step down from that.
Right. They ruin lives. No doubt about that. Well, you know, it's interesting. Yeah. And I think I've said this before, and I've never seen the Murdaughs, any of them, in person, of course. And most of the pictures I've seen are stills. But I look at this family and I think, wait a minute, it looks like this family tree doesn't fork. These people don't look like they're all there to begin with.
Yeah. It's very strange. And then the other thing is, too, as far as the housekeeper go, when you look at that thing, you got this estate. There's probably 30 or 40 staircases, but they're claiming she fell down the front brick steps and the dog tripped her.
Yeah.
No way. No way does that happen.
Yeah,
no
I'll be fascinated. Fascinated to see how that comes out.
And the other thing, too, the wife being involved in that, and then going back to the embezzlements and the thievery and all this, she had to know for 25 years they were living four times above their means.
Of course.
Had to know what he was doing, and she had to confront him about that at some point, saying, you know, Alec, tell me where this money's coming from,
right,
in case we got to go to prison someday.
That's a good point. Yes, if she did, depending on how she would confront him, I can see where he'd think, well, I got to do away with her. Oh, man.
Yeah, there's no question. They were probably all involved in that, including the one son. Of course, he's not alive anymore, you know, whatever.
Well, the other son's very questionable. And that's,
going to be
fascinating to see how that plays out.
Yeah, well, when they reopen the fake hit and run, then he's going to be in jeopardy in that one. And I hope they can put that case back together, you know.
I do, too. Well, thank you for the update, and thank you for calling.
Yep. Request?
Yes.
Okay, two requests.
Yes.
For me, Hoochie Coochie Man.
Okay.
And for the current government administration, too much monkey business.
Yeah. Okay, you betcha. I'll do it.
Okay.
Okay, thanks. All right. We'll talk to Johnny in Austin, about that original / Vancouver's But Not, and more coming up right here on WGN Radio.
Running running to and fro, hard working at the mill, never fail in the mail, yet come a rotten bill. Too much monkey business, too much monkey business, too much monkey business for me to be involved in. Salesman talking to me, trying to run me up a creek, say you can buy it, go on, try it, you can pay me next week. Ah, too much monkey business, too much monkey business, too much monkey business for me to be involved in. Blonde half good looking, trying to get me hooked, want me to marry, get a home, settle down, write a book. Too much monkey business, too much monkey business, too much monkey business for me to be involved in.
I heard that. WGN Radio, that's for Detective Chuck. That, of course, is Chuck Berry and Too Much Monkey Business. Yeah, I think that was the flip of Brown on Handsome Man, if I'm not mistaken. All right, so Johnny in Austin. We've got about 30 seconds here, but I want to hold you over to next hour. How are you doing?
Oh, everything's rolling with the flow, you know.
You feeling okay?
Yeah. One day at a time. I'll catch up on that later. But,
Yeah.
Good to hear you got relocated and everything. You made it work.
Yeah, well, seemingly. Now, hang on. Don't go away. Want to talk about the originals, the Vancouvers, and everything else. So stay right where you are. We'll also talk to Don and Beloit, and there's another hour. There's room for you, too, coming up right here on WGN Radio.
Baby, baby, you don't understand how much I love you, baby, and how much I wanna be your only man. Oh, baby. Stay a little while longer, baby. I wanna talk to you just a little more. I see the little tears in your eyes about to fall. You are wondering if I'm for real.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That's the originals doing another version of Baby, I'm For Real, which is a fine record all the way around. And it was Johnny who started this discussion originally, and we're back to him in Austin. Welcome back to WGN Radio. So what's up?
Well, just rolling with the flow. Like I said, yeah. I've been listening to you ever since you got back, and I heard some of your replays, too.
Oh, man.
And I've been listening to that little radio station in Globe, Arizona called KJAA.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually...
That's a great...
I heard it in Scottsdale.
Song.
Yeah, I heard it in Scottsdale the other day. I was very surprised. Doesn't happen often, but it came in for 1 minute there, actually one afternoon, loud and clear.
Is that right? Well, I heard a couple of really good songs in there, one of which was, my friend Gary said, can you tell me who this artist is? He already knew, and he's playing me this song. He said, I bet you'll never guess who this is. And I said, no, I don't. He said, well, you know, it's got a connection to Raleigh. And I said, And the song was called That's How Much I Love You.
Oh, okay.
And I said, who in the hell is it? And he said, that's Charlie Rich.
Of course.
And I had never heard it before, and actually it sounded very... I mean, he said it was on a old Sun compilation.
Yes, that's absolutely...
That song did not sound old.
No, it was. It absolutely was.
I mean, the quality of it was really good, and plus it was a really good... It kind of sounded like a standard, old standard.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. It's a fine record.
Yeah, I was, you know, you could play that on some kind of big band station.
Yeah. No, Charlie did a lot of that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, country was later for him. That's not what he was doing originally, to say the least.
Well, I mean, I know all the Mohair Sam and the Lonely Weekends and all that.
Right, but I mean, even before that, it was much more blues for him. And, you know, he just wanted to be in a dark bar playing the blues piano and just having a good time. So, you know, that kind of jazz sound is exactly what he liked.
I want to get it. Of all the CDs and music I have, I don't even have that song because I never heard of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably on a couple compilations now, because that's the other thing. The longer time goes by, the more it shows up on a lot of these compilations.
I bought recently a CD of his from Bear Records out of Germany.
Oh, yeah.
It's got 33 songs on it, and... It's really good, but I was disappointed in the fact that the song that they re-released by him that was a hit back in 74 called There Won't Be Anymore.
Yes.
It was a total different version of it than the hit.
Well, it might have been a different label. No, this is another thing that was going on when Charlie finally hit big time. You know, Smash and RCA and anybody else who ever recorded Charlie Rich record looked for those masters to put them out.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of that stuff wouldn't necessarily be that it was going to be the hit.
No, but this, you know, the Bear record folks in Germany, they do really good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And this was just not, it was just not the version that I knew. And actually, the year says 1998, so I don't know.
Well, he didn't record it then, that's for damn sure.
When did Charlie Rich leave us?
Oh, I'm trying to think, because, yeah. It was that, it's 95, I think, and it was in Hammond, Louisiana.
So 95?
Yeah, I think it was July of 95.
Wow.
Yeah.
You said he was on the, I've heard you tell the story before, he was on the way to a concert?
Well, he was in a motel in Hammond, Louisiana. Yeah.
Oh, man.
He was performing. But yeah, and let's face it, that's the way to do it. Just drop dead. And, you know, I think that... they were driving, and Alan, you know, Charlie Rich Jr., who was still Alan Rich then, was performing in Natchez at one of the casinos. And so I think they had decided they were gonna stop there. And so he had been just coughing, because of course he was a smoker, and he had issues, and of course, you know, he was an alcoholic, and these are well-known facts as far as that goes.
Yeah.
And apparently he was coughing heavily that day, and so doctors thought that maybe that loosened the blood clot in his lung, and he died in his sleep. He had a pulmonary embolism. He was only 62.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, but it did not surprise me in the least, because, you know, when you're drinking in excess for that long a period of time, and you're not eating well, and you're not exercising, and, you know, all the things, and you're smoking like a chimney, it catches up with you. So it absolutely was a blood clot, but anything else is going to be conjecture. You know, was it the coughing, or who knows? But, yeah, Hammond, Louisiana, it was just a motel that they had stayed in after they saw Alan.
Well, when you worked for Charlie Rich all that time, and what, didn't you say it was about 5 years or something?
Yeah, a few years, it wasn't that long, but yeah. And of course, he was in Memphis, and I was based in Nashville. And so I didn't see him every day by any means. Now, there were times, I've mentioned this before, when he got the gig at the Las Vegas Hilton, and I'll never forget it, Cy Rosenberg, who was Charlie's, you know, business manager, called me up. He said, "Well, you're moving to the Las Vegas Hilton." I said, "I'm what?" And he said, "Yeah, you gotta make sure to keep Charlie in line." I'm like, "You gotta be kidding me. I can't do that." And he said, "Oh, you're gonna do it." And so fortunately, he had a wonderful bodyguard, Big Al. And so, you know, between me and Big Al, we steered him away after the shows from the casino to get him back to his room.
with somebody who drank as heavily as he did, was he fairly easy to deal with on your part? I mean, he might have not showed up.
Okay, stuff, see, that, all right.
Okay?
His temperament was fine, but here's what just absolutely killed me. He would agree to do things, and I would book them. And, you know, the infamous one was the big award show in Nashville. It was a local TV show, Teddy Bard, of all horrible people. But anyway, and by the way, I don't know personally, but I mean, the show just was terrible. But anyhow, he was going to be the big act on this Teddy Bard show, and he agreed he was going to do it and all that. And that morning, I got a call from Cy, you know, the business manager, saying, Charlie's not going to make it. And I said, how much did he drink last night? He said, he drank enough that he's not going to make it. So I had to go to that damn TV show, and they were not happy. And in fact, I'll never forget it, because I was, you know, as usual, I was sick. And at the time, I was on a lot of prednisone and other things like that, you know, the autoimmune queen. And so I looked like hell. Well, I know exactly how I looked, because they put me on television, and they handed me every one of his awards. So here I am in dirty white jeans and a black turtleneck, you know, t-shirt and, or, you know, long sleeve shirt, and they're just pounding one award on top of us. You know, I'm practically falling over holding these awards, and, you know, that was kind of typical. I learned after a while that when I'd agree, you know, to Charlie being there, I said, no, there's a caveat. I don't guarantee that he'll show. I said, he says he wants to do it now. And, you know, on the other hand, there were times when he'd come into my office and I'd say, we're going to call some radio stations. And he said, that'll be just great. And he'd sit there and talk to program directors, you know. So he was a very nice man, but, you know, he was not reliable because of the drinking. And then there was a very weird relationship with him and Margaret Ann. And on a emotional level.
Is that his wife?
Yes. And she wrote some of the stuff too. And, you know, that long, you know, wife from childhood. I mean, they were together forever. But it was psychologically, in many ways, an S&M relationship. And so when Cy managed to get Charlie to sober up, and he really did in 74, and did very well with that, and what happened was that Margaret Ann couldn't stand not being in control, because, of course, when you're, you know, when you're a codependent with a drunk, you're basically controlling the show. And she didn't like not controlling it. So she got into pills, and basically she drug him back down. And, you know, that's where I could see how that was going to play out. But yeah, so it was a very odd situation. But as far as a human being, he was a very nice guy. I thought he was a sweetheart. I never had, you know, mentioned his temperament and all that. I never saw any indication that it was going to be a difficult day because I had to deal with Charlie. It just wasn't like that. But man, explaining why he wasn't there. God, I had to appear in Chicago at the MOA convention, you know, the Music Operators of America, the jukebox people, or as many people would say. Yes, I don't need to explain more about that crowd. In any event, I had to get up there, you know, and it was supposed to be Charlie. And you know, I'm picking up all these awards. And I said, you know, Charlie's sorry he couldn't be here tonight. And somebody in the audience, yeah, because he's drunk as hell or something like that, you know. And I said, well, yeah, but actually he's out making money for you. Now, how much is he making each year with your boxes? And they shut up. But but yeah, it was uncomfortable, to say the least. So there was a lot of that. But as far as a person, no, he was great.
Well, that's interesting.
You were working
with him in his, when somewhat of his sober times? And
yeah, I got the sober time and the drunk time. I left after the CMA award show where he lit the winner's card on fire. Yeah, but all together, I thought he was a terrific performer. My favorite, I've mentioned it many times, was always Mohair Sam. But, you know, I think no one was more surprised than he was that he became a huge success, and he didn't like it. He was scared to death to perform in front of big crowds. He hated that. And so that was part of it.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, that was part of it. You know, he just wanted to be in that sleepy Arkansas bar playing his blues.
Hmm. That's, you know, pretty simple way to go. I mean, you know, we all, well, you would think we all know what we really don't like, and if he didn't really like it, he was out of his element.
Well, he was totally out of his element. And but as I also mentioned before, the interesting thing is it wasn't his records that made him wealthy. It was his business manager, Cy, who bought the Wendy's franchises for Nashville, Davidson County in his name.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that a long time ago.
Yep, and that was really the money.
Is his wife gone now?
Yes, Margaret Ann is gone. His daughter, Lori, died, God, it's over a dozen years ago now, I think. And she was in her 50s. So, Alan, who's now Charlie Rich Jr., he's still alive. I didn't really know him. At the time, he was on Epic as Alan Rich, but at the time, he was really kind of separate from his father. He didn't really want to be in that image. That's why he was using the middle name. And, you know, he's still around. In fact, it was weird because Charlie had a publicist, too, that Cy Rosenberg had hired, Florence Seaman. And I remember she was a real trip. She's no longer alive either. But at one point, she was from Cleveland. At one point, she had been Alan Freed's secretary. And way back. Oh. And man, did she have stories. Oh, geez. So we'll let the dead rest, but about some of them. In any event, her daughter and Alan married, which was, I thought, surprising. And then they divorced, and then her daughter died. So, yeah, everybody in the story, Cy Rosenberg is dead. I think his first wife is alive. I think that's the only person, Natalie, who is left from that group of people.
Wow. So, back to you. Did you get the move done okay?
Well, you know, it's an ongoing process. Well, the studio's on the air, and that's all we cared about. You know, just get that done.
Yeah, I know.
But,
did you do that alone?
Well, basically, but when it came to, you know, as far as setting up the computers and all that, I can network anything. And so I set all that up, and all that was fine. And there's a lot of moving parts on that. And, oh, man, you deal with some of these cable companies for your broadband, and you know, you descend into hell with that. But I got all that done. But then when it came to the wiring, to be honest with you, John just sat here and he said, here, put that into that, put this into this.
And
it was, you know, and so it made it just a pleasure. I followed orders.
Oh boy.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. So yeah.
You're settled in? And
No. I'm not settled in. Are you kidding? Remember, this was unfurnished. We had to wind up literally renting an unfurnished apartment for a year. And we had to do this because I couldn't get wired broadband. Anything that was temporary or furnished offered wireless broadband. And this equipment won't work on it. So I had to have wired.
How did you pull that off?
What do you mean, how did I pull it off?
Get wired broadband.
Well, I rented an apartment for a year.
Yeah, but I mean, all these are supplied. Everybody does wireless. How did you?
Oh, no. Whenever you're renting your own apartment, you're gonna have your broadband coming in, and it will come in as wired. Then, if you want to do it wireless, you can. But
okay.
You know, if it's a cable modem, you get a piece of coax. You know, and I supply my own routers and my own modems, which are separate from each other as far as in my life. And, you know, then, of course, the wireless access point, which is also separate from the other two. But in any event, I am about to investigate. I've got my fingers crossed here, and it's going to come down to money. Because apparently, Cox, who's the supplier of cable broadband here, they offer business fiber. Well, of course, be still my heart. Oh, this was symmetrical. Oh, man, you know, I mean, words like symmetrical are like porn to me. In any event, the deal is that I'm going to call them because I'm hoping that they have wired somebody for fiber reasonably close to here. Because then I'll only have to pay the difference to drag it here. Now, of course, since this is just a temporary apartment, even though I got it for a year, probably don't need it for a year, but I got it for a year, I'm not about to spend tens of thousands of dollars to, you know, bring in fiber. But, you know, if it's half a block away or something, well, we might be talking. So I'll check that out, too.
Well, it sounds like you got good speeds. Your audio's good.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, they always give you download. They're very stingy with your upload, and it's very asymmetrical, which I really hate. The ping times are they're adequate. About 12 milliseconds. Not. I don't hate it, but I don't love it. There's some jitter. Not a tremendous amount. I'm not getting packet loss. So, I can't complain all the way around. But if I can get fiber, oh man, I'll be a happy camper.
Speaking on technical things, your company, I believe, owns a television station in Austin, Texas.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. It's not my company, by the way. The one who owns the radio station I am on at the moment. So we will pick it up right there. Don't go. Yeah, I was saying, I do? All right. Hang on. Well, we'll pick it up right there in moments right here on WGN Radio.
To go with me everywhere I go, do everything I do, that's how much I love you. I want you to be with me every time I play, when I'm sad or when I'm gay, that's how much I love you. I never treat you like a lot of guys might, leaving you at home while I'm out on a spree. I'd very much prefer to be home at night, sitting in front of the fireplace with you on my knee. I want you to be with me, baby, while we're young, till our final fling is flung. That's how much I love you.
Yeah, and that's Charlie in his element. That's when he was happy. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Of course, that is Charlie Richard with Johnny in Austin. We're going to pick it up right there in moments right here after the news on WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. And yes, that's Charlie Rich. He wrote a Graveyardville. And that was on Sun. Now, of course, a lot of stuff came out later on CD. It was never on a single. But this was typical of Charlie sitting in, an Arkansas bar. All right, so we're talking to Johnny in Austin. We're back.
Yeah. I'm sitting there looking at Charlie Rich's CDs, and I can't find a one that's got that song on it.
It's going to be on a Sun compilation.
Yeah, I've got a Sun compilation, but it's not on the one I got.
Yeah, no, it's on a few.
Speaking about this TV station, so yes. Owned by Nexstar.
Yes.
In Austin, his station sustained damage during this ice storm we had, and it's still off the air.
Oh, wow.
And I was thinking, I've never seen a TV transmitter, but I bet you that's not one you just call up and say, we need a spare down here. So I guess they had to rebuild the whole thing.
You know, what's really interesting is how little over-the-air viewing happens with television. And there's many examples where stations have been off the air for a prolonged period of time and the viewers never knew it because everybody was watching it on cable. Now, less people on cable today, but more people online today with various services, you know, whether it's YouTube TV or whoever, and the local channels are included. So, you know, how many people actually pick up something over the air to begin with?
I do.
Well, you're in the minority. And now, in Globe, it's interesting they have a translator for the Phoenix stations, and because Globe is a very poor community, many people do watch it over the air. And boy, I'll tell you, when that translator goes out, what's the first thing they call? They call me. You know, they call the radio station. Like, well, find out. You can find out, you know. So invariably, I'll call one of the chiefs, and unfortunately, and there's fewer and fewer of them working for any of the stations. You know, it's almost all contract now. But, you know, and I'll say, what the hell's going on? They'll tell me. But it's rare in most cases. I think one of the Philadelphia stations was off while I was there, and no one noticed it.
Well, they put it, they temporarily put it on one of their sub-channels or whatever you call it.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting that they've been off for so long, and I you know, I imagine a TV transmitter is a pretty big piece of gear.
Well, yeah, and you know, I plead complete ignorance because after TV Repack and the moves, you know, you're talking about KXAN, you know, where they are now, it's all U's. And, of course, U stands for Ultra, which really kills you when you get the power bill. But so it's Digital 21 and Virtual 36. But, you know, I can't begin to know how that even is anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, it's must have taken a big hit on that. But anyway, real quick, you familiar with a song by the Isley Brothers? I don't think it was a single, but it's a real good song called "My Love Is Your Love Forever," back to their Motown days.
Yeah, I think we've played that.
Yeah, it'd be nice to hear a little bit of that if you have time.
Okay, all right.
"My Love Is Your Love Forever."
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm absolutely aware. So, when you said Isley's, it's interesting. A lot of people like the slow version of "Who's That Lady," which doesn't get much play either, but that was very nice too.
Oh, they did some good stuff, and their career just spanned years.
Oh, yeah.
Days on RCA with Shout to the Motown days to the Teaneck, and where'd they go from there?
Well, remember, they were on RCA doing the what became an Eddie Hodges hit later, "Gonna Knock on Your Door."
Really?
Oh, yeah, that was absolutely the Isley Brothers, yeah. And
they were on Wand 2,
yeah.
Twisting with Linda and all that.
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it's, I'm going to knock on your door. Yeah. Rudolph, I'll play that for you sometime because it's actually my favorite version of that.
Are they the one? Am I confused? Are they the ones that wrote "Respectable" for the Outsiders? Was that the Isleys?
I think it was. I think it was also. Absolutely. And of course, there have been many, many, many Isley Brothers over the years.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But
anyway, it's great to hear you back in the groove again. And yeah. John sounds great, and it sounds like you got a little work to do together. But
yeah. Oh, we will.
Two
we will.
Very fortunate folks.
Oh, I agree. John doesn't understand that he's lucky, but he was very, very lucky. And yeah, we'll play the Isley Brothers version of "Respectable" too. I know that was on the Shout album. So sure. But yeah, I'm going to have to play this. I'm going to knock on your door since you've never heard it. So you'll have to tell me what you think.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I can do that.
Good deal. All thanks.
Right, well.
All right.
Good night.
You too. Thanks for calling, Johnny.
We'll talk soon. Okay.
I hope so. All right. So, yeah, in fact, the Isley Brothers, of course, like I mentioned on that Shout album, that was the first version of "Respectable," and I assume they wrote it. You know, I never really looked at the label, but I would assume that was the case. All right. So, let's see. Don and Beloit, what's up tonight? Are you still there? Are you still with us? Or are you asleep?
No way. Of course I'm still here.
All right, Don. What's up?
Oh, I got a great one for you to bring this whole night together with your murder stuff.
Yeah.
I love your stumpers, your challenges. I mean, I think this goes out to all of us that just love you. You have such an encyclopedic knowledge of all these old songs and bands and stuff, you know.
Totally useless information. Thank God for talk radio. So, what? Tell me about your story. Tell me about the murder.
Well, I'm gonna get to a 50s superstar. This murder story is gonna get to a 50s superstar for you. Well, you were talking about. I mean, it's just so. Of course, it's horrible to listen to, you know, stories about children murdering people and so on. But this is one of those stories that just absolutely overpowered New Zealand in the 50s. And it was called the Parker Holm murder. And, you know, these girls seemed so normal, you know, teeny bopper, post-war, you know, how could anybody do something like that, you know? And this movie, there was a movie about it 40 years later by, you know, the great one, Peter Jackson, 1994, Heavenly Creatures.
Okay.
Did you ever hear of this?
Yes.
It was beautifully done. Kate Winslet and this Melanie Lynskey were stars in it for these teenage girls that were friends.
Yeah.
And this is like an early 50s thing. It was beautifully filmed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to plot to murder your mother, I mean, I don't know how someone could do that, you know, but I wanted to just talk about, it was just filmed, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things about it that were very positive. And one of the most emotional scenes, just so beautiful, was this great scene of one of the greatest, I didn't know about this until I read the credits and studied this guy, but Mario Lanza, there's a scene in it with Mario Lanza's song called The Donkey Serenade. And I was going to suggest that this guy, I talked to like World War II pilots and people, you know, at the time that I knew, and they're like, oh yeah, Mario Lanza was like, I mean, he was like the Sinatra and, you know, the three tenors. We think of the three tenors being so popular, but this guy was really something back then. And to listen to young teenage girls going on and on about this and singing along, I mean, I haven't seen this movie in, you know, a couple of decades, but I remember that scene in it, and I just thought, you know, that there's a story for you that it led to, you know, several different versions of the movie. I mean, even The Simpsons covered this plot at one time in an episode.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Donkey Serenade, right? Alan Jones, I think, wrote it. But yes, Alan Jones' version was from the 30s. But Mario Lanza, yes, had it as well. Know the Donkey Serenade well. So sure. And yeah, that was a real weird thing. The way they murdered a mom in Christchurch. I remember that story. What was interesting to me is that you hear these things more recently, but these girls were born like in the 30s. So you're talking, like you say, the early 50s, and you don't normally think about that period of time producing, well, let's take a walk with mom and kill her.
Right, exactly. Yes, yeah, and of course, the communities were stunned when things like this happened, whether it was Canada, like your story earlier. I mean, it's been, you know, a different plot line for your evening radio show, but I mean, this is really something. Yeah. I thought you could tie it back to music and maybe just do a few seconds of that donkey.
Of the donkey side, the Mario Lanza version of it. Yeah, why not? Yeah, I've certainly played the original, and which is pretty awful. But
even I didn't know about that other version of that. I didn't even know about that.
Oh yeah, no, it came out in the 30s. But what was interesting about this case, because again, you're talking, you know, the late 40s, early 50s. The parents, Parker's parents, were very worried because they thought that Parker and Holm were involved in a sexual relationship, and at the time, to them, you know, homosexuality was a mental illness, and so the Parkers just didn't want these girls to see each other, and the Holmes were, you know, more okay with it. You know, they were concerned, but they weren't, you know, they weren't saying you can't see each other. So you know, the girls kind of went nuts. They invented their own religion and all that kind of stuff, and it got interesting. But there was no, and the parents, there were extramarital stuff, and I mean, it was a soap opera start to finish.
Yeah, yeah. And a great city of Christchurch,
yes,
in that area. Right?
Yes, right. Yes.
I mean, I think there's a time when you become obsessed with something or something as a teenager that's unhealthy. I mean, we all still got to go to school, or we all got to go to work. You know, I mean, there was a sort of part to that. I'm not familiar with what really happened or anything, but yes, I mean, when people or young students or, you know, mid high schoolers or whatever, you know, they get too wrapped up in possibly a relationship like that to the extent of everything else, to murder your own mother. I mean, obviously there's a lot of mental serious things going on wrong there.
Well, yeah, and what was interesting, of course, is basically there was little in the way of punishment, and they left free lives after that. So that's, you know, that was my point earlier. At what point do we say that no, you're old enough to be done away with in terms of for society's good? So yeah, that's the deal. Well, I'll look for the Mario Lanza version of the Donkey Serenade. Yeah.
I thought you'd get a kick out of
it. Absolutely. Right. Well, I'm glad you called.
Thank you so much for talking to me.
And thanks for waiting. I really appreciate that.
That's okay. That's all right. You're worth it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
You keep doing what you're doing.
All right. You keep calling. Okay. Good deal. So, absolutely. Yeah, the Parker Home thing is interesting. And you can, you know, read all about it. And there's so many facets of it. It's like, whoa, boy. But yes, the Donkey Serenade. I might even try to find the original. And we'll get to Stacy in Algonquin. Got an update. Oh, good. Can't wait to hear it right here on WGN Radio.
A song in the air, but the fair senorita doesn't seem to care for the song in the air. So I'll sing to the mule, if you're sure she won't think that I am just a fool. Mio, does she not have a dainty bray? She listens carefully to each little tune you play.
A bella señorita,
si mi muchachito, she'd love to sing it too if only she knew the way. But try as she may, in her voice there's a flaw.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. So that is the Mario Lanza version. But as I was saying, that certainly wasn't the original. You know, Jack Jones, well, his father was a singer. And in 1938, which I think is the year Jack Jones was born, actually, on RCA, Alan Jones, tenor, did the original Donkey Serenade. Oh, man. Well, you got to hear some of it, I think. Why not? Movie too, yes, The Firefly in 1937, and it starred Alan Jones, yes, Jack's dad, and the lovely and talented Jeanette McDonald, yes, and yes. End of Mule. And so there you hadn't really thought about the Donkey Serenade in a while. And usually I do think about Alan, not Mario. But yeah, Mario was absolutely a big deal. You betcha he was. Now, I also had told Johnny I was going to play a little of the Isley Brothers original. Yeah, that later was a hit for Eddie Hodges. But yeah, I thought the original was just a fine little record somewhere. Let's see. Yeah, no, it's here. It's here somewhere. Yeah. Come back. Come back, little Shio. All right, here we go.
Elaine, this is out here. If you don't come out tonight, I'm gonna knock on your door, ring on your bell, tap on your window too. If you don't come out tonight while the moon is bright, I'm gonna knock and ring and tap until you do. I'm gonna knock on your door, call out your name, wake up the town, you see. I'm gonna hoot and a howl like a lovesick owl until you say you're going out with me. Hey little girl, this ain't no time to sleep. Let's count kisses instead of counting sheep. How can I hold you near with you up there? And me down here, I'm gonna knock on your door.
And Rudy was married to Elaine. All right, so the Isley Brothers from 1959. It was a B-side on RCA. Aaron Schroeder and Sid Wayne wrote it. So, 888-876-5593. Man, I've got minutes. I forgot how many. I think I'll take it to the top of the hour, though. So we'll see what we can get from Stacy, and then we'll finish up tomorrow night. But Stacy, welcome back to WGN Radio. How's it going? Stacy. All right. Stacy went to sleep. It's probably for the best. All right, so we'll undoubtedly hear from Stacy tomorrow night, because we'll do it all again tomorrow night for three big hours. And what else is going on? So now I have the waning 3 minutes. And see, that's why Carol is so good. She does this great show prep for me, and I can sound like I know what's happening when, in fact, I don't know where I am at any given time. So yeah, full show tomorrow night. That will be Thursday, and then next week full Monday night trivia. But Tuesday will be delayed an hour. Likewise for Wednesday, and Thursday will be delayed about half an hour, but that's the deal for next week's whatever. So it is. I've got this day in history thing from Wednesday, and let's see, where did it go? All right, yeah, and that's nice, because very often Carol does all this great work, and then I never mention any of it. It's true. Carol Bayer Sager turned 76 today. All right. Yeah, she had the misfortune of being married to Burt Bacharach. It was not pretty. But yeah, she wrote a book about it, I think. You can read it for yourself. But 76, born in New York City. And, of course, she co-wrote You're Moving Out Today. Yeah. Baker told me what you do with bread. Yeah, all right. And co-wrote it with Bette Midler. And let's see, what else? Little Peggy March. 75. Yes, right. I Will Follow Him. And she didn't do too well financially from her young career, because I don't think she got any of the money. But later she moved to Germany and did very well. Yeah. Mickey Dolan, 78 today. Oh, man, that dates us all, doesn't it? Yes, of the Monkees, born in 1945 in L.A., of course, was in Circus Boy earlier and answered the ad in the, what was it? I don't think it was Variety. I think it was in one of the L.A. papers to become a monkey. And he's still touring with Todd Rundgren, actually, and stuff like that. And so what else do we have? Gary Numan is 65. Yes, Cars. Yeah, you betcha. What else? Actually, I say this because it's now no longer Wednesday, so I should be looking at Thursday. But on this date in 1966, Bob Lind was on Where the Action Is. Yes, doing a medley of his hit, Elusive Butterfly of Love. But Elusive Butterfly was so big. And yeah, by March of 66, I think we were all just sick to death of that song, because it was just played incessantly in February, to say the least. What else? The Silhouettes, number one on the charts with Get a Job. You know, followed it up with I'm Living in the Poorhouse, and I guess they were. Nobody bought it, but I thought it was a terrific record. And so much more to say, but of course there is 3 hours tomorrow night to say it. So until then, we'll say that's a wrap. We'll thank Adam for keeping us on the air and for watching my level, since God knows I don't. And we'll thank John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. Couldn't do this without you. So we'll reconvene 21 hours from now. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.